and she says, Paul Fisher said.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but.
Shocker.
Call the Senate Community Region Affairs meeting to order. We have before us two bills, Senate Bill 538 and House Bill 550. We'll bring back Senate Bill 538. We had some questions on it. And Mr. Campbell, who would you suggest that we call first?
Scott.
Yes. Could we hear from the municipal, after municipal meeting, please? And you do have in your packet a copy of the memorandum that went to Representative Adams and the members of the House Finance Committee on this bill. Identifying yourself, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. Let me try and, because we talked about this and I'm going to repeat a few things from yesterday, but maybe that'll be useful. Let me just start out by the current CS for House Bill 538 Finance combines two bills, HB 434, which dealt specifically with tax increment financing, and 538, which is an expansion of the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank's authority. The League supported both pieces of legislation. The reason they were combined is that 538, the expansion of the bond bank, would be a mechanism, well, provided for, a CS provided for use of tax increment financing as another vehicle that the bond bank could be involved in, and would be a mechanism that municipalities could use to save money. That's why Alaska Municipal Bond Bank was created, so that that entity could sell bonds on behalf of smaller municipalities who could not, do not enjoy the same credit rating as some of the larger municipalities, but the bond bank, by grouping these, can and just with their own portfolio, can attract a better rate, and of course saves everybody money. So basically then the bill combines two, and I will walk you through section by section. You can ask questions as we go through, or just wait.
I would prefer that if we, let's have the presentation,
that's
then
fine.
Come back to questions, because I think it's all tied in together.
Okay. Section one, as you can see, is basically amending a section, AS 2935210A. That was added because what you're dealing with is tax power and economic development power, and it clarifies, in the case of a second-class borough, the new language, engage in the activities under the Section 2, which is the tax increment financing and the debt for development and redevelopment purposes. It just clarifies, at one point, that was added to number 8, subsection A8, provide for economic development, but the drafters felt it was better just to have as a new section, but to clarify that this is an economic development activity that can be done in this case. It still keeps it as a non-area-wide power, which requires an ordinance. So,
right,
and that is
non-area-wide power.
Correct. In other words, it can be done borough-wide. As intended, it's for certain sections of a community, whether it be
right.
a borough or a city, just for specific areas, not something that you would do for the borough-wide or even city-wide. But it's needed because of boroughs, their powers are limited in different ways than cities are. And that comes from 434,
okay.
and not from the original 538.
All right.
Okay. In Section 2, debt for development and redevelopment projects, again, this is language that comes from the original HB 434, and as was referred to yesterday, under the tax code, amended tax code of 1986, severely restricted state and local governments from issuing tax-exempt debt. There are some provisions that still remain, and this would allow municipalities to take advantage of what still remains to go after tax-exempt bonds, which obviously are cheaper and more attractive to many investors. And the reason that this language is there is because the IRS requires that specific authorization be given in statute. You may remember under antitrust, in the Boulder case, we felt that home rule gives us the power to do anything the legislature says, doesn't say we can't do. That did not fly with the federal government. In many cases, they require a specific statutory reference, and that's why we've used language like blighted areas, which may or may not be the case, but that was the original intent of that, and may be the situation where you have properties that have been run down and you need to deal in those, and also the language redevelopment purposes. This is language right out of the IRS code, so that it's clear that that's the intent of the legislature and would allow if approved by the Brady community and the municipality itself, to qualify for federal tax exemption. And it, under redevelopment purposes, talks about the types of activities that might be under redevelopment purposes. What you have oftentimes in urban areas especially is a hodgepodge of properties. It may require to bring those properties together to a large enough parcel so they're attractive for development, private development, those kinds of activities. Again, under B, subsection B of that same section, again, 434, HB 434 language, and talks about the tax increment authorization. It does not mean that this property is taken off the rolls. It says that let's fix some time, period of time, what that tax value is, and the assessments would continue. But as that property is improved, presumably the value of that goes up, and as you apply that tax rate overall, that would increase the amount coming from that area. That amount only, not the base amount, would go to pay off the bonds. Basically, it becomes a revenue stream to pay off the bonds, much like a revenue bond, because you're pledging just that
added
for that area, benefiting that property, not something area-wide, municipality-wide, and doesn't make the community's not losing the money on that property. Then we move to Section 3, and at this point we move into the original Bill 538. Which was the expansion of the bond authority. Basically, subsection B just removes the language that was limited to general obligation bonds to allow for Section 4, which extends the authority to certain types, and I'll get to that in a second. But just basically removes the limitation. When the bond bank was first authorized and set up, it was for GO bonds. It has been used more in the past than it has been recently, just because we've had, good capital budgets. But as those become less and less, bonding may become something that's required. Then, under Section 4, again, part of HB 538, this adds authorization language to the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank for obligations of a municipality, including special assessments, tax increments, and lease purchases. For example, if a community is looking for a new truck, road grader, or whatever, possibly do that through a lease purchase, lowers the cost, extends the payments out, rather than having to go out there at a one-time shot. Special assessments, where you're actually improving an area of a community, maybe with a new road paving job or whatever, again, you can extend those payments and reduce the cost. So that basically explains the bill. Tax increment financing is a mechanism that's used in other states. In a previous life as a planner in Beaverton, Oregon, we had a tax increment district in the downtown. It was very successful. It's not a cost item. It basically allows public improvements to stimulate private development investments in areas in the community. It's just a financing tool. And then the other aspect of the bill is expanding the bond bank authority to provide public services at the lowest cost. Finally, there were some questions about bonding. Without a vote of the people, let me just try and address that. We're not talking about the general obligation of a community in this case, and when I'm talking about that, I'm referring specifically to the tax increment financing aspect under Section 2. There is bonding currently allowed under statute without a vote of the people. The Constitution specifically, in Article 9, Section 11, specifically states that the restrictions requiring a vote of the people do not apply to indebtedness to be paid from special assessments on benefited property. What we're talking about in tax increment financing is benefiting that property within that area, not community-wide, and the benefit is the improvements, which increase the value, and that increase in value because of that activity goes to pay off that eventually. Over time, that's taken off, and then you've got an improved area property, and it benefits the whole area. But the immediate benefit, and the stimulation is the public improvements. Municipality would go out and sell bonds to make public improvements, put roads in, street lights, water, sewer, whatever it may be, to improve that area, to stimulate development. It may be, as I mentioned before, to combine parcels, to clear off dilapidated buildings, whatever, to make that a sellable piece of property. But it's not just the municipalities there. You're getting the property owners in that area that are buying into that. They're going to the municipality saying, will you do this? We will participate in this activity. So that does not necessarily require, does not require a vote of the people. Not all debt requires a vote of the people. Basically, it's GO, or if it, as mentioned yesterday, if the municipality has a charter or an ordinance that says in certain indebtedness practices, we want to vote of the people, that's a local decision. But specifically, the state law is predominantly referring to GO debt. The protections that you have, of course, is that this goes before the council, an elected body, albeit smaller perhaps than the legislature, it is the elected body in that community. The financial market obviously is going to be very, watching this very closely. They're not going to go into a deal where they don't see the money there. In fact, we added additional language calling for a letter of credit or equal security to back this up in the tax increment aspect. The property owners are the ones that are asking for this activity happen. It's not something you just go in and say, we're going to do this. It's usually a joint effort, and they're pledging that property. Just also, there is municipal debt under Title 29 that can be entered into without a vote of the people, specifically by an ordinance, whether it be revenue anticipation notes, where you're anticipating revenue to go in there and you go out and bond because you know money's coming in, revenue bonds, elections not required, refunding bonds, and special assessment bonds. And for the most part, this tax increment financing is very similar to what is normally known as a local improvement district, which is usually
special assessment. Yeah, I was just thinking, for instance, we don't have capital dollars for Unalaska, for example. They need about $6 million worth of public
for water and sewer
that would bring in close to $70 million in improvements by mm-hmm. people that want to come and do business for the fishing industry. And I could see this as an excellent, where they would have some revenue stream where they do not have enough taxing capacity. Is that an area where this could be used?
I don't know specifically.
I see Sterling is nodding yes, because that we've got to find some ways to meet some of those things.
It's a classic public-private partnership activity to stimulate development. Think protection's provided.
Sure, Senator Kelly.
So if I disagree, I think that they could build the whole building, not just the water and sewer. And I think they go in and sell four people on city council. And on page 4, line 16, where an obligation municipality only has to be secured by a lease, I think they could build the whole thing. We're not just talking water and sewer utilities here. We're talking about building the whole deal under development. It's not all redevelopment projects, right?
I wonder if
they can either develop or redevelop. And redevelop is rather well defined, but there's no definition of development.
Madam Chair, through the Chair, Senator Kelly, the intent is, of course, under the redevelopment is the only thing that's allowed or specific in terms of the tax exemption. However, that the activity may be used necessary for development purposes. If you're in the development purpose, you don't have tax exempt bonds. You're going to have to deal with taxable bonds, and that would make it more limited. I don't know if I can answer
I wonder
specific
if,
question. Maybe others can.
Sterling Gallagher, if you want to make comment on that specifically, you could join Mr. Burgess. We have a good number of people that would stand by to testify. I don't know if there's anything new here, but I think we need to just get the questions answered. Mr. Gallagher, if you identify yourself, and can you respond to the question of Senator Kelly?
Yes. I'm Sterling Gallagher. I'm the Vice President of John Union. What's intended here is an equipment leasing program. And what we have in mind is fire trucks, police cars, that sort of thing that municipalities are already leasing, but at much higher rates. We're not intending to build. That leasing provision isn't meant for a private partnership, a private-public partnership. It's intended to do municipal activities.
Let me try
Senator Kelly, please go ahead. Senator Kelly?
Well, let me try another approach. Now, what he testified to was that, we're expanding this with bond bank because we're running out of all the flush oil money we have going around, and we can't live like we used to live. But the municipalities still want to keep spending like they used to spend. So now, instead of using capital oil dollars from the state, they're going to bond for it. Now, sooner or later, doesn't anybody care about what's going on in the bonding market out there but me?
Mr. Burgess.
Just one example in your hometown, and I don't know how applicable it is to this, but it certainly was debt financing with a revenue stream coming back, a public improvement that benefits the community as well as the, you know, investment of private funds, and that's the parking garage in Anchorage. You know, you build a revenue stream from the parking receipts coming back in that building, and you built a public, basically a public building. It benefits the property.
And well, Senator, we've also used it on the court, and we could never have that revenue stream allowed us to go forward. So we haven't had to do these because the state has done it. And now the communities do not have adequate GO financing, but they're pledging a revenue stream, and that has to be there, or they're not going to be able to sell to the market. But I don't see that as being certainly.
Those are two good examples.
The major projects we have to finance this year are basically LIDs where people want, let's say, in the Mat Valley, want gas to their homes. We're financing the extensions of the lines so they can have gas in their homes. We also have two paving districts in Anchorage. Situation is the legislature has given a grant to the municipality, and the municipality has been asked to come up with a match. They think they're short funded. They're asking the people who are getting specifically benefited to pay for that, but they're half of the paving district. So, at Homer situation, you got the same situation. We have $2 million of paving districts where the people are willing to pay for it. They've signed up with the city that they're willing to pay for this, and they're paying it back.
Madam Chair, we are stretching much beyond our water and sewer paving districts, in my view, in this bill. You know, let me give you another good example. The parking lot was a good example. Let's take the grain elevator in Valdez. Everybody was real excited about the grain elevator in Valdez, and I'm sure that they would have worked some kind of deal to go into debt and to extend the water and sewer lines out to it, the electrical lines, everything else, even if they did somehow figure out to bond the whole thing without a vote of the people. And what kind of revenue scheme do you think they'd have in the room there today?
Marty Rutherford, you are indicating we might as well have a round table here because we're talking philosophy, so we'll get everybody up. You could identify yourself, and could you respond to Senator Kelly and Representative Menard after that if you have any comments.
Marty Rutherford, Department of Community Regional Affairs. I didn't hear your total question about these, but that was a general obligation bond. It wasn't a revenue bond, so that was going to a vote of the people, and they were willing to put the full
and what was the result of the budget?
Well, obviously it's sitting, but they are paying off the debt
out of
their tax structure, and they recognize that that was the result.
And how many municipalities in the state of Alaska have a tax structure with the oil line running through it?
Not as many as we'd like, Senator. But I think the point being that most of these, if they dealt with it, you know, they didn't look at that as a revenue producing one. They knew that there was a risk involved in that, so they didn't attempt it to be a revenue bond.
Representative, well,
But we are now going to allow municipalities to take those same kinds of risks without a vote of people and without the backup of an oil terminal to use the tax base if things go bad.
Does anybody want to respond to that?
We're talking about paving districts. We're not talking about green elevators.
You're talking about paving districts, and let's get it out on the table now. The more bonds that we sell in the state of Alaska, the better your company does. Is that a reasonable?
Yeah, but...
All right. I know that won't influence your judgment, but, you know, that's the bottom line. And I am real concerned about the number of bonding proposals we've got floating around at the state, municipal, regional, and every other level. I mean, this is serious stuff. We haven't issued a general obligation bond since 1980 in the state of Alaska. But look at what we've done. We've done all those lease sale back things. Seward did the prison. I just voted for the courthouse. That's the last lease back I'm ever going to vote for, by the way. I'm just not going to do that anymore.
Senator Kelly, I've been concerned, and as chair of the state budget, we have done the best work that's been done, and it probably ought to go back to take a look at those interrelationships that have been trying to get a cap on school debt, for example. But here we're talking about a kind of financing that takes the revenue stream. It's very close, in my opinion, to a revenue project. It's a way where they're not able to go to general obligation, just like the state isn't, because it's far too large a percentage of those income coming in. This is we're talking about discrete projects that have to stand on their own, and they're going to have to go to the market, and the market's going to be the test. But it doesn't get into the full faith and credit. It does get into it just for that discrete property, and those people are all involved. If it doesn't work, they're not going to be able to sell those bonds. And I think not to allow them that kind of a mechanism when the dollars are not going to be coming from the from the state. This is used all over the country. We're not talking about this new, untried, unique kind of a program.
What we're talking about is rate, too. They can already do this. We're talking about going from a taxable rate to a tax exempt rate. That's what we're talking about.
So we're actually saving money on these projects. Senator Szymanski.
We saved money on the Valdez Grain project?
That was a GO bond, and they made a mistake. But they're paying it off. And they have the revenues and the full faith of their community to do it.
Everybody in the community had a chance to vote and took the same risk. In this situation, they're not going to have a chance to vote.
They're not taking the same risk.
All right, well, let's talk about the dollars for a minute. And let's talk about how you pay back these bonds that are issued. You know, so if you have $1 million worth of property in a blighted area, you know, and you go in and you bond and everything, and all of a sudden it's worth $1.5 million, you're only going to get taxes on that portion that's owned by private enterprise anyway, aren't you?
We have a letter of credit if it doesn't work.
All right, explain the letter of credit.
What was required in the legislation, the biggest danger to the municipality is that the developer doesn't develop as it's projected, or somehow the values aren't there. That's the biggest danger. What we've required in the legislation is that the developer give us a letter of credit to pay off that in case his development doesn't work.
All right.
What does that mean, though?
All right, Senator Szymanski.
A letter of credit means that.
Is it like a cash bond?
Yes.
There's no question in your mind that that's a cash bond.
Yes, there's no question in my mind what that language means.
The other question then associated with that is, whatever the project may be, it will extend, and we've kind of hedged around this, but it can, and in all likelihood, will extend beyond public utilities. It could be a full project, which would include the foundation, the structure, the building, the modification changes to a whole mall area. It could be anything. Is that right?
It has to be a public facility.
Through the chair, please. Representative Menard.
Well, it's my understanding, and you can come back on these, that on those development projects that are on there, is the funding source is going to have to be a combination, could be a combination, because if you program out a tax increment of maybe a $900,000 plus gain, and you program out what the tax revenue stream or the revenue stream on that to get the tax-exempt status on the bond, you're not going to be able to sell bonds on the tax-exempt status for the whole project, most likely. So you may have to, in that instance, you're just using the protected side just for the utilities, and up to that point, you're not going to be able to use that income stream for the whole project. You're going to have to use some other form of financing. It could be a combination.
So why don't we restrict it in the bill? You're saying it already says that in the bill now?
Well, when you go to the bond market.
No, but I mean, why can't you just say that in the bill? That it's restricted to those utilities, not beyond the development, not into the actual private development area.
Because it's a...
If that's what you want to do.
All right, Mr. Burgess.
But just I think I may be just repeating what Representative Menard said. The intent here is to finance public improvements to stimulate development on private property. In other words, get that private property something going on. What's being bonded for is not what's going on that private property. It's to get the streets, the water and sewer, which benefiting that property. It's not benefiting the other citizens in this, except the spinoff.
Can we say that in the bill?
By constitution, all we can finance in the public.
No, wait a second. Don't go waltzing around on this, because I'm about ready to walk out of here in about 2 seconds. If somebody come up with a straight answer.
All right, Senator Szymanski, let's refine. Your concern is you think it's overbroad.
And I just want to know if what they're saying is accurate, then why can't we put it in the bill?
All right, Mr. Burgess.
Well, Madam Chair, through the chair, Senator Szymanski, we've whittled this bill down quite a bit. I don't know. I'd have to go back. You know, we've been working with bond council, with these people that see this project, you know, attempts to use this. I don't know what damage that is. That there's no question the intent here is to deal with public improvements to stimulate development on private property. I don't know where you'd write that.
All right, now.
And I don't know what damage it'll
do. All right, so the concern of Senator Szymanski, if we can do this, is that we are limiting to public improvements, even though it benefits private property. It's in a development. You want to be sure that that's what the purpose and the intent of the bill is. All right, you will work with, and we'll pick out somebody to be assured that that's in here, and we will, now, I don't want anybody to walk out of the room, because I want to get this resolved. We have 3:30 on, and we can come back with that. Senator Szymanski, will you work with Mr. Burgess to answer that question, so we can consider this at 3:30? Senator Kelly, could we identify your concerns? Yeah, are they the same?
Well, yeah, essentially. Let me ask Kurt, what they envision, there's a reason why he wants this bill. You envision a project with Paul. What's the project you envision?
Oh, we have the city manager.
All right, Mr. Sulak, would you join us at the table, please? Yes, would you identify yourself, Dave? Welcome.
My name is David Sulak, and I'm the city manager for the city of Palmer. I just came in,
just walking down the hall.
But in listening to, some of the concerns of Senator Szymanski and also Senator Kelly, some of the as the language is written in here, especially when it goes back into the tax increment financing, spelling out plated areas and everything else, these were put in particularly, to make the tax increment bonds tax exempt. It's this exact wording that's taken out of the 1986 Tax Reform Act. Going back to Senator Szymanski's thing, and I think you sort of hit it too, is what precludes us from not building new buildings in addition to taking acquiring property and assembling property for a new project. First of all, the Tax Reform Act limits amount of the bond issue that can be used for buildings up to only 25%. So therefore, of the whole issue, whether you sell a $500,000 issue or $1 million issue, only 25% of that can be used for buildings, period. Otherwise, the bonds would lose their tax exempt status. The building otherwise could go through the normal route, and therefore they would be taxable bonds.
What do you have envisioned for Palmer?
Downtown redevelopment.
Right, now how are you going to finance that?
We would, we've hired a consultant to help us in downtown enhancement, and what we'd be looking at is creating a farmer's market type of situation, leading back to the railroad, also doing some streetscaping and other things down there, some similar to what Anchorage did in the 4th Avenue.
Similar to what Juneau did
there. Or, yeah, same
except
thing.
We did it with state dollars.
See, what we would do is we would be selling the bonds and using that captured value or the increased value that you alluded to earlier.
Okay, now what happens to the private businesses that are located in the area that you plan to restructure? Do they still own their own land?
Oh, yeah. Unless I bought it. In other words, there's no change of ownership.
You're going to go and change the buildings, aren't you? You're not going to leave the same old building. I mean, you're not just putting in water and sewer lines, I trust.
No, from my standpoint, at this particular point in time, I would go, be doing into the streetscaping and downtown beautification, those types of things. If I want another project where I wanted to go assemble the land and everything else, then I would have to take and acquire it and, demolish it, assemble the land for the development. Then I'd have to put in the sewer and water and the infrastructure if it weren't available, if it had sufficient capacity.
Senator Szymanski.
Okay, but the policy call associated with this, let's take downtown Palmer. We draw a 4-square block area as an example. And we're going to go in and put sidewalks, maybe some new revised street lighting, whatever. Could be water upgrades, a lot of different things. That 4-square block area that receives the new appreciated value, if you want to say it, because it's enhanced by the utilities and cosmetics and so forth, all public cosmetics, no private cosmetics, is that increment of increased valuation is then dedicated back to retiring the debt that created the thing until it's paid off. The policy call is if you didn't do that, that increased appreciation, like in downtown Anchorage when the ARCO building or the new building went in, the appreciation went up. That tax base, on an area-wide basis, received the benefit rather than the restricted area. And what you're saying to the people outside of downtown Palmer, the 4-square block area, is, well, the appreciation's gone up, and generally speaking, you would receive the benefit from it. You're not going to receive the benefit from it in this particular case because we're implementing this type of a bonding procedure. And that's the only policy call from a taxing standpoint is you're shifting it from being a area-wide equitable tax to a specified area tax, and people are, you know, people need to know up front that that's what's being done. And that's what another concern with regard to whether or not there is or is not a vote. You're saying that you can do what you want to do right now, except for it's not tax exempt.
Correct.
Under current law.
All right, the point, though, of course, on that would be that a blighted downtown or a blighted area is certainly not going to generate business and development. You were here at the table.
So I just, to the chair, just to respond, to take that, because I think it's a good sort of summary, but they're adding two things to that. One, your assumption, though, is that that area would have increased in value without this project, and that's the whole point of this, is because it wouldn't have increased in value if this project didn't happen. So to say that they don't get that benefit, they wouldn't have gotten the benefit anyway if the value didn't increase. The second part of that is, at some point, when the bond's taken off, that appreciated value does go to the whole community. So it's a stimulation. I mean, and the thought theory is that without that stimulation, it wouldn't have happened. Maybe in 20 years, it would. You know, eventually the thing would have gotten so bad, people would have sold off, and somebody would have acquired all that property, maybe done something, put in a mall or whatever it is. But this is to stimulate. So that's the only thing. I just wanted to carry that one step further.
Okay. Senator Kelly.
Okay, what kind of limits, what kind of controls do we have at the bond bank? Is there any upper limit? Can they go forever? Because at some point in time, Madam Chair, if they run into trouble, they come to us. We've got no choice but to pay them out. We've got a $10 million limit on either. What kind of limit do we have on Mr. Bond Bank?
Mr. Burgess.
Well, but my understanding, you give them the authority. My understanding, 2 years ago or 1 year ago, it was up to $300 million. $300 million.
Where are they at now?
$160 million.
Is that a double?
We took the action, and they've had a very good rating in the market, and are doing well. I think the controls are there.
Well, let me ask
Senator
this.
Kelly.
How does the municipal bond bank pay back their bond? How do they carry their debt structure? Where's their income derived from?
I think you need
Mr.
to get
Gallagher,
the bond count, because I'm not.
Unfortunately, the head of that agency is ill, apparently. Mr. Gallagher.
The particular property that we have pays back the local bond for remits and payments sent to the municipal bond bank.
Is that under the new program?
That's under all programs.
The way it's always been.
We always buy the municipal bond. We don't. They create the bond at the local level. They create the payment streams. They bring the idea to us, and we either approve it or disapprove it. And we've turned down projects. And if we approve it, then we sell it.
So the municipalities are your income stream?
Absolutely.
So your income stream depends on the solvency of the municipalities?
Absolutely.
Are you worried at all about Anchorage facing a $25 million deficit next year?
Not in the least. The debt structure...
Why? Tell us why we should. Everybody else is. Yeah, tell us why.
10 years ago, the debt structure of Anchorage was 10% was 10% of assessed value. Today it's 2.4.
Oof. Bond.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure.
With property having gone from $13 million appraised value a couple of years ago to $8 million today?
They've been paying off their debt.
To the chair, the Kenai Borough has more school debt than the city of Anchorage.
So you know what the difference is in Anchorage? We've been building capital dollars, not bonded.
I understand.
That's right. That's right.
But we're getting back in a situation where we're looking at bonding dollars on a municipal level to replace old capital dollars, and I'm not sure that's healthy in a declining oil revenue stream.
Senator Kelly, I don't know when I have disagreed as much as I do with you on this particular one, because it is about time, isn't it? But I see the vitality out there, and they're bringing projects. They're trying to find ways that are economic development projects that they don't have to come down to this state government with their handout, and they've got to be good projects for the bond market. We are not in problems in this state on our bonds, with possible exception of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The municipalities have been far more conservative than the state government. And I don't have any fear with adding and allowing these economic developments to take place.
Madam Chair,
go ahead.
Can't you make a case the reason they've been conservative in the last 8 years is because they've received so much capital dollars from the state of Alaska?
No, because they are more conservative. They are closer to the people. I'm absolutely convinced that they're far more stable, far more controlled than the state of Alaska will ever have. I'm convinced of that with the quality of municipal finance officers around the state. You know, I'm convinced.
And I've seen that happen in Sitka, and I've seen that happen in Skagway. And I, you know, I'm not that close to municipal government as you are. But let's make another assumption, that most of the debt they've gone into has been voted on by the public. And that's what's kept them conservative, and not a majority vote on the council.
That's not true in assessment district. It simply isn't true. I mean, that those are benefited properties. This is not so unique or different. It's what they can do now, except they can do it at a cheaper rate.
Am I
saying anything wrong? I don't think I am. Senator Szymanski.
Can I just suggest that we do two things? We ask staff to get us a response drafted to the bill that gives us some language securing it to the public road, water, sewer, utility, whatever, not private bonding that we're going to do with it. One, two, that if we can put a vote of the public on it if it's possible. And if those two things are drafted into the bill, then we'll take a look at it next committee meeting, and we'll rock and roll on it.
Senator, I think that those may be killing, but we will take a look at those and come
take
back.
Take a vote.
All right, Senator.
I could see where the second one would be a killer.
Yeah.
Public vote?
Yeah.
It would be a killer.
Sure.
I thought maybe if you don't want it, then I have no hang up on it.
One of my resentments is that we are going to allow the Municipal Bond Bank to expand its authority and municipalities to go further into debt without a vote of the public. But I agree that that's a killer amendment to this bill. I would think the other half of that's going to be.
All right. The first one again, do you restate that, Senator Szymanski?
That we get it drafted so that the improvements be restricted to public improvements and not allowed to be used for private improvements.
All right. We'll have that back at 3:30. Before we go on, Mr. Burgess?
Just a clarification, as Mr. Sulak said, there are activities where a municipality may have to acquire private land. If you put a road in that doesn't exist, you have to buy some property to create that. So you may have to buy that piece of property.
That's property.
Okay.
It's a public road.
Okay, just so you
okay.
But if you buy it and it's owned and operated by...
You just don't want the municipality financing private development is basically what you're saying.
I get it.
I don't
mind financing utilities.
Right. Public improvement is what you're saying.
Madam Chairman, one thing I would like to through you to ask Senator Szymanski, and this goes back to assembling of property. Now, in other words, for example, you know, just using downtown Palmer, there's just numerous, and same thing in Anchorage, numerous property owners, but to get, say, a major redevelopment downtown, we have to assemble four or five parcels of land to get it under a single ownership so that we can take and resell it. Under the way that you understand that this, the redraft, we can do that type of assembling of land.
Well, you're going to be bordering on, that's the questionable area. I mean, where do you stop at that? You go ahead and buy a mall from Zamarillo, restructure it with the bond money, and then sell it off to private enterprise? No, I don't think you do that.
Mr. Sulak, do you want to continue on?
In other words, this is part of the tax increment. We're not only talking about the improvements, but also sometimes to get, you know, so that I can sell the issue to the bond bank here, I have to have the bird in the hand. And the bird in the hand says, City of Palmer, you assemble this parcel of land for me that's 10,000 square feet, which means that I have to go out and negotiate the property sale and purchase it, knock it down, have it ready for him to come in and build on. And that would be part of, you know, the tax increment.
I don't see that being a public utility or public service. That's private land, private development. And if they want to assemble it and consolidate, then that's their project.
Mr. Burgess?
I would say that that's critical to this piece of legislation. I mean, I've worked with it in other communities. It's critical. And we're dealing with downtowns that have grown up over time where you have 5,000 square foot lots in the middle of a downtown area or something. You're not going to get somebody that's looking for a key piece of property that's not going to go out there in the borough somewhere rather than locating downtown where he has to deal with 15 property owners. When he can go out and buy a large multi-acre piece out in the borough somewhere rather than locating in your downtown. To stimulate that, to attract that, you assemble that parcel of property, you buy up some dilapidated houses that people may not even live in the community anymore, they're just holding that piece of property. And it's this, you don't lose anything. You get that piece of property and you sell it back to the private developer. But you're not going to get a developer that's looking for an easy piece of property, and if you want to have them come to locate in your area, you've got to provide that kind of incentive. I don't see that as private development. I see that as working to create, you know, a piece of property that's attractive. You know, it's just like going out and making an industrial park.
Well, let me use
a senator.
And we should move on to the next bill, I guess. So what happens?
The point of it is, I think this is an important bill. I think it's an important concept, and I want to work through it. Senator Kelly.
If Peter Pan comes to Unalaska and says, you know, if you guys will build this processing plant for us and run utilities out there, you know, we'll sign a lease. And so they geo-bond, and then they use this other thing for utilities, and Peter Pan goes belly up. And then what happens?
All right, who can tell us that?
I mean, why? Should Unalaska make that kind of a major decision? I mean, and would the bond bank say, yeah, we'll go for that?
If Peter Pan came in with a letter of credit,
Peter Pan's a bad example. Somebody out there that says he's going to buy a boat in Portugal and has got a crew in South Korea.
He couldn't get a letter of credit.
Who convinces three of the five council?
If they came in with a letter of credit, and the city approved it, and they had a letter of credit from the National Bank, they might look at it.
What if they had a letter of credit from a Swiss bank, but you don't have time to go on?
It's maybe even a better bank, I'll take it.
All right, now, we're getting very close to session time. Can we wrap this up in some way? I am obviously interested in this bill, and we are going to talk our way through it if I can keep the committee as interest, and there seems to be interest. Mr. Burgess.
Let me just, I think that the critical issue to go back to this is you're talking about things municipalities can already do. We're trying to put this language in statute that's clear for the federal government in order to get tax exemption. We can already do what you are not sure you want to allow us, municipalities, to do and pay more money to do it. The issue is getting tax exemption or to use the bond bank to do it. I mean, that's what we're down to. Again, we're talking rate.
There's one paragraph that says that.
All right.
We can put that as easy.
Throw away the bill and just get down to one paragraph that says you now have tax exempt status.
Madam Chairman, we're...
Senator. This bill brings us in conformity with the new federal tax law, and it has to have this in statute in order to do it. That's what it's about. So if maybe you can, you know, I don't know.
Again, the definition of blighted is right out of the tax code. The definition of redevelopment purposes is right out of the tax code. That's why it's in here. It's longer than we want.
But why are we playing with the word development? If you're talking about blighted areas, you're talking about redevelopment. Why is the word development in there?
Who could respond to that?
Madam Chairman, the majority of this bill has been drafted by Eric Wolforth and Tom Fleeker of Wolforth and Flink. In other words, that we've went back, I've worked with them for almost the whole entire session on the tax increment financing part, and that's why these particular words are verbatim from the 1986 Tax Reform Act, going back to Senator Kelly's entry. Madam Chairman, is that, in other words, we're talking, first of all, redevelopment, but we also may have a parcel of land that's downtown that's not even developed, so to speak, now is vacant, and so that then it would be under development
cost. Could you do that same thing 4 miles out of town?
If you wanted to take and make a particular thing outside of town, make it a tax increment district, in other words, you come up with a plan, you're not just saying, I'm going to do it out here, as so to speak, as in Alaska. You're going to have to come up with a total plan of what you're proposing to do there to come back to the bond bank. It's just like, you know, in selling bonds of official statements. You're telling the potential people purchasing the bonds of what you're going to do. Your tax increment financing, you come up with a plan of what you're proposing to do, what your increments are going to be, and everything else, so that when the bond bank purchases those things, they've got an idea. In other words, just to say, can we do it 4 miles outside of town? If we can come up and show how it's going to enhance the area, fill up the increment and everything else.
See, if you're going to build, if you're going to build a business park, you know, I don't mind a municipality streaming water and sewer and stuff to a business park. I don't want them building a business park. I don't want them being at risk for that business park.
Okay.
We're going to take care of that. I'm through the chair. That was my understanding of the intent.
And you will come back with language on that along with
it. To answer the first question about why development is in here, every time you change, the reason we did Title 29 was to get away from 400 lists. The problem is now we have to put language in the statute to satisfy the federal law. If we just put redevelopment, it would be call into question of whether we can do development. Because when you put something in the law and you don't say something else, the implication is if you didn't put it in there, you must not be allowed to do it.
All right, if we can get Senator Szymanski, Senator Kelly, if we can get the narrowing of that, so, and you understand that. And also some statement regarding the tax code and the fact that we need this language. Is there anything else that you would like them to come back with?
Well, looking forward to seeing it.
All right, now.
Two questions for you.
Yes.
One, Sterling, what was our limit before we raised the 300?
200.
And then the question to the mayor. If you guys were to do this project, do you have to go to the Madison Borough Assembly and get their approval to do it? Well, how could, I thought we were discussing second-class boroughs here.
I'm the city of Palmer's home rule city, and the borough, has, under a second-class borough, has the taxation, education, and planning and zoning powers. But since we do levy our own millage within the city, we're dedicating that increase, their increment within the city for that particular
issue. It'd be the city's share, their own special.
Only our share, only our 4 mils.
Other questions? Now, we still have one other bill. We have 5 minutes. We can't do it. We have a problem on location, but we will post it on the board as to where we are at 3:30, if God is willing and the session works.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
I've only got one problem with the mystery.
All right.
And that's that there's no floor, no minimum. My problem stems to the fact that I don't want to give anybody that much. It's not, I don't think it's fair to anybody to give them that much discretion. There's got to be some kind of floor.
Mr. Harper, when you come at 3:30, would you be prepared to speak to that? Fine. Thank you. All right, fine. Thank you. Meeting's adjourned.